All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, week three edition of the show. I am Bobby Fenton. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 2-0 and getting ready to play in the, well, it's America's Game of the Week, as they call it, on Fox at 4:25 on Sunday. They'll travel to Los Angeles and their first appearance in this new stadium, SoFi Stadium, I guess they call it, and they'll take on the Rams. It's the only matchup, by the way, out of the 16 games this week between two 2-0 teams. There are only seven 2-0 teams left, even after just 2 weeks. Everybody but seven have a loss, and this is the only one where both teams are 2-0. So it should be a fun one. We're going to talk all about it on the show today, look back a little bit at the Atlanta game, and of course look ahead to what's going on. So thank you for joining us on this edition of the Free Stretch, brought to you as always like our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, where just like always, you can get yourself anything you need, whether it's brand new or pre-owned, whether it's a car, a truck, or a van, and whether you want to go there in person, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, or you just want to do it all from your home or office or wherever, go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. They spell it C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. You can check out all the inventory there. You want to test drive something, something looks good to you, all you got to do is tell them. They will bring it to your home, they will bring it to your office, and you can test drive it there. If you want to buy it, they'll bring it back to you. And if you already have one and you need service, they'll come and do that too without you having to leave. So all these things are taken care of, but I do recommend going to see the beautiful showroom and the giant lot they have and everything there. Again, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. You've got the unlimited nationwide lifetime powertrain warranty. You've got 10 years roadside assistance. You've got the first year of service, maintenance, oil changes, all taken care of. It's all one big package, so check them out at BillCurryFord.com or in person, like I said, over there on Dale Mabry. So thanks to them, thanks to the Joes for giving me this chance. As I always say, it's the best place for Bucks coverage anywhere, and it's a privilege to be on here to get in front of all of you. I know all of you were watching on Sunday when the Bucks beat the Falcons 48-25. Things got a little tight there after the Bucks had a nice little halftime lead, even though Bruce Arians wasn't happy about it. If you heard his halftime interview on the Buccaneer Radio Network, he seemed perturbed, despite the Bucks having a 21-10 lead at the time and looking like they were going to be just fine, and they were. But there was always things they could do better. And so the standard's clearly higher. And Arians was a little upset. But things in the second half then almost prophetically kind of got tight. And not that you ever felt like there was any danger. I mean, when it got to be 28-25, even then, I never really felt nervous. But then that took care of itself in short order, especially thanks to a couple of Mike Edwards' interception returns for touchdown, which we'll talk about in a moment. But Tom Brady, 5 touchdowns, and that train just keeps on rolling. And like I said, it's more than just looking like a wily veteran who's getting by on craftiness and experience. I mean, he's physically looking as good as he's ever looked. He's zipping the ball all over the place. And the 5 touchdowns are one thing, but one cool little note that Greg Allman wrote about in his post-game column, the Bucs beat writer for The Athletic, he had the 6-yard rush there. Anybody caught that in the red zone on third down, got him a first down. And obviously we know Tom Brady's not exactly like crazy legs out there, but I didn't realize how rare it was for him to even pick up 6 yards. His entire rushing total last year was 6 yards. He got 6 on that one play. And this was a crazy stat. I just wanted to get on the show, and hat tip to Greg Allman for putting this in his column. Brady has the lowest rushing average of any NFL player in history who has at least 600 rushes. And not only does he have that, but if he ran for a 99-yard touchdown on his next 9 carries in a row, he would still have the lowest average of any NFL player in history with at least 600 carries. So he does not run the ball. And even with that run on Sunday, he became the second oldest rusher in the history of the NFL, the second oldest person to ever have a carry. The most is Steve DeBerg, by the way, who retired, then came out of retirement briefly, and at age 44, ran the ball a few times, and he had Brady by about a year. So Brady, if he does this again next year and just has to run the ball, we'll maybe get that record too. And in Brady's defense, someone pointed this out on the Twitter replies. You know, it's not a sack is not a rush. You don't get charged for that. But when you kneel down, that is a rush. So that's probably dinging Brady's average pretty good, especially considering all the times he's ever had kneel downs. Those all count as rushes. So in Brady's defense, that needs to be pointed out. But the offense was clicking. Like I told you in week one, then it bore itself out in week two. Antonio Brown was huge in week one. Didn't hear a lot about Mike Evans. He didn't have a big game. He wasn't really a huge factor. A few targets. And everyone's like, oh, well, it's Mike Evans. And then you come out this week. This week, Mike Evans was the one making huge plays. Brown had a little bit less of a role, although still a prominent role. Godwin did what Godwin does. There's always going to be somebody. And the Buccaneers are, and that's to mention Gronkowski and what he's doing at tight end, catching those first two touchdowns from Brady. So that's the whole point. I mean, that's what I told you guys. One week it might be, you know, Evans. One week it might be Antonio Brown. One week it might be Godwin, or it might even be somebody else. But it's always going to be somebody. Not that they're going to win every game, but I mean, they have those weapons in the holster. And they will need them this week, by the way, because in case you haven't heard, Antonio Brown is on the COVID list. He's not officially out for Sunday yet. If he has two positive tests and he's asymptomatic between now and Sunday, he could still play. Bruce Arians, in his comments today, and I'm recording this on Thursday in the midday, made it sound like they're not anticipating Brown will play, but if he does, it'd be gravy, is what Arians said. And the same thing goes for Kevin Minter, who is not a name you hear a ton about at linebacker, but does play an important role on special teams. My other concern I have, and haven't heard anything about this, but if those two guys are on the COVID list, are they it? Or are there going to be other names that we hear about between now and Sunday? If it's just those two guys, I mean, that sucks. Those guys are both important on their respective units. But, you know, especially receiver, that's their strongest position. And, you know, whether it's Tyler Johnson or Scotty Miller or some combination of both, they should be able to step up and fill those roles. Antonio Brown had 35 snaps a game so far in the first two games. He had 70 total snaps. So he's averaging 35 a game. Those will have to be replaced, again, by some combination of Tyler Johnson or Scotty Miller or other people, too. O.J. Howard could get more love at tight end behind Gronkowski. Whatever. And then Minter on special teams would always be missed. But, you know, if those are the only two, and we hope it is, it shouldn't be that big of a deal. And also Jaden Mickens with the hip injury. Oh, one I didn't mention yet. Jason Pierre-Paul, he actually went to Colorado or somewhere to see a specialist. His shoulder's bothering him. Word came down today he doesn't need surgery or anything at this time, but he is needing to rest the shoulder. How long? Is he out Sunday? Not officially, but he very possibly could be out Sunday. But if that happens, I want to see Joe Tryon show Inc off the edge a little more. Because I'll tell you, and again, there's been so many different things to look for in these games, and the Bucs draft picks haven't played as big of a role as a normal year because we, one, drafted lower, and two, we had all their starters returning. But he made some nice, he was in the backfield a little bit. And off the edge is, you know, I mean, he could replace JPP out there in a more prominent role. I think he'd show more. I mean, he, you know, they're easing him in. But if Jason Pierre-Paul can't go, that is probably what you would see. Looking back, by the way, at the game against Atlanta, a couple things I forgot to mention before we get more into the Rams game. Not to nitpick negatives, but Ronald Jones, again, not looking great. He had the one play where he ran out of bounds right in front of the first down marker, and it was on that side of the field. Like on, you could see the marker like right in front of him. And I think he even made a first down signal afterward, like he thought he had it, and he didn't. And the next carry was third and one, and he had a big hole for the easy first down and ran outside instead and got tripped up, and they didn't get it. Missed some blitz pickups and just generally is not playing well right now. So a lot of people are freaking out about this, and I would encourage those people to sit back and look at the big picture and that our offense is humming, and maybe that will tell you something about how important it is. It doesn't mean I don't care if Ronald Jones plays well or not or Leonard Fournette. I mean, you want the people who are in the game at every position to play well. But if you think this is a pressing issue with the Bucs, I mean, I heard some people saying, man, I wish we had traded away some more second-round picks and gotten some more third and fourth so we'd have better running back depth. Are you nuts? That's insanely stupid to say something like that. We got Winfield in the second round. We got Ali Marpet, right, in the second or third round, whatever it was. And you're wishing we had more running back depth? GTFO. I mean, I want Jones to be better, sure. But look at the Bucs just scored 40-something points. What are they? What was that one stat? Nine games in a row, nine wins in a row, 30-plus points in all of them, which is like never been done, ever. And we're worried about the running back? It's not that big of a deal, guys. I tell you this all the time. And if they do, which Ronald Jones is going to still play his normal role this week, I think. But if they wanted to replace him tomorrow, just replace him with anybody. Go, I don't care. It doesn't matter that much. Stop thinking this running back stuff matters as much as it does. But anyway, I thought I'd point it out. I'm not worried about it because the offense is, 48 points and they had two defensive touchdowns, yes, but still. 30-some-odd points by the offense. 48 is a total on Sunday is the second most in Bucs history. Tied with several other instances they've done that. And it was the team record until a couple years ago when they went out to L.A. like they're going to do this weekend and played the Rams and scored 55 points at the Coliseum. And this one will be in the new stadium. But totally not a big deal, okay? And I wouldn't worry too much about it. As for other positives, like I said, Mike Edwards, that was only the third time in Bucs history a guy had two interception returns for a touchdown in the same game. Both of the other times it happened were pretty memorable games. One was 2006, the win over the Eagles. Rondy had two TDs for interceptions for touchdowns in that game. That was the Matt Bryant 62-yard field goal game, the walk-off winner. And then the other time it happened was the Super Bowl in 2002. Dwight Smith returned the interceptions for touchdowns. And then Mike Edwards this Sunday. And it sealed the deal against that Falcons team. The offensive line, by the way, is really performing well. We talk about Brady. We talk about the receiving weapons. We talk about the running backs, not always in the best light. But we haven't talked about the offensive line yet this year that much on this show. Through 2 weeks, their Pro Football Focus grades in pass blocking, number one in the NFL for the offensive line, in run blocking, eighth in the NFL. So the offensive line playing its ass off. On defense, like I said, you'd like to have seen a little more, in the second half there when the Falcons, especially the third quarter, really narrowed things up. But the defense responded in the fourth quarter and made those interception returns and just got stops. And the game never felt out of reach. Now, I'm not saying the defense doesn't matter. You can outscore your problems when you're the Bucs. You're not going to do that every game. But as of right now, and yeah, there's a lot to correct, and Bruce Arians, as he was, would be the first one to tell you, but none of this is a terrible concern. I would buckle in. Of course, you always think it's going to happen, then it goes the other way. But based on the history, I'd buckle in for another big scoring game on Sunday against the Rams. This will be the third time McVay's gone up against Todd Bowles. And this is just when the Rams have the ball. Third time Sean McVay has gone up against Todd Bowles as defensive coordinator. And in those two games before, the Rams have run the ball 26 times. They have passed the ball 121 times, so nearly 100 times more. Nearly, 6-5 on the pass-run ratio? Excuse me, 6-1 on the pass-run ratio almost, or 5-1. And in those two games, the Rams have produced 931 yards of offense and 67 total points. And that was with Jared Goff both times. Not Matt Stafford, who's going to be out there on Sunday for the Rams. And hat tip to John Ledyard of Pewter Report, who put those numbers together. I was reading about that. So, the Rams have put up some points in the Bucs the last couple times they played them. There was that game 2 years ago, 2 years ago at the Coliseum I talked about. The Monday nighter last year wasn't quite as high scoring. It was 27-24, I think I remember, and the Rams won it, but they had a lot of yards in that game, and given how the Bucs' offense is going too, it could be a big one here on Sunday afternoon, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see the only two 2-0 teams in the NFL going up against each other in this one. And you get all the trappings and accoutrements that go with being, the game of the week, national TV. It's going to be everybody that gets this one. You get Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews, the whole crew there. And the Bucs have only started 3-0 four other times in their history. So this will be the fifth time they've been able to do that. And the first was 1979, which was the magical run to the NFC Championship game for that Bucs team that was only in their fourth year of existence at the time. They did it again in 1997, still probably, I'd say, my second favorite Bucs season of all time behind 2002 is 1997 when they finally basically became good for the first time and they had that 5-0 start, the first time in my lifetime, I should say. And, that was like a dream. It was, the Bucs had just been in the wilderness for 15 years. Ended up 10-6 that year, winning the wild card playoff game at home and the last game at the Old Sombrero against the Lions, lost the next week in Green Bay. In 2000, they were 3-0, went on to a 10-6 finish. That was one of the 2 years in a row they lost in the wild card round at Philly before the Super Bowl. And then in 2005, NFC South champions, they started 3-0, finished 11-5, and lost in the wild card game against the Redskins here at home. So this would be the fifth time in neither of the two seasons that they won the Super Bowl did they start out 3-0. In fact, they didn't even start out 1-0 in either of those two seasons that they won the Super Bowl. They lost to the Saints in week one both times. But still, the best part about being 2-0 is that you have a chance to go 3-0. And if they win this week, the best part about that will be having a chance to go 4-0. So we'll see what they're able to do against the Rams. Across the entire NFL, though, you may have noticed something, and maybe you haven't. I've noticed it in college football, too. I don't have hard numbers like I do for the NFL to back it up. But I was reading just some numbers on the penalties that have been called so far this year in the entire league. And we've talked all about the taunting stuff. And I've seen a couple of those calls just in what I've been, you know, obviously watched the Bucs games and then watching smatterings of other games depending on what's on and when. But that's not even the biggest issue right now. Here's a few numbers to throw at you. And we'll start with the specific penalty that is looking like it's also being emphasized, even though you didn't hear much about this one the way you did about the taunting one. Terry McAuley, former NFL official. He's your guy on NBC now that they go to whenever there's an officiating thing. He's the one I like the most. I feel like a lot of these referees, you know, that they have for all these different networks for college and pro, they get the ex-referees to weigh in anytime there's an officiating dispute. I feel like even those guys miss a lot of things. Terry McAuley is one of the ones I consistently find myself nodding my head, and not just on TV, but on his Twitter feed too. He'll post clips of things that happen in various games and say why this was right or why this was wrong. He doesn't miss things. Like he sees things and like he points them out and he uses common sense. I'm a big fan. Anyway, on his Twitter feed, he talked about illegal man downfield. And this is a penalty that, you know, again, this helps the defense, this penalty. Ineligible receivers can't run downfield on passing plays. They can't on running plays. So if you're an offensive lineman, you have to be within a yard or two. I mean, it says a yard, but they're a little bit lenient with it, or they were, of the line of scrimmage. So you can't be 5 yards downfield. And when you do that, one, the reason the rule exists is because the defense wouldn't know who they have to cover and who they don't have to cover if you allowed ineligible receivers to run downfield. And two, the way it helps the defense is if you do see guys going downfield, you can play the run. You know that's a running play. So I have no problem with the rule in general, but they're calling it a lot more this year. Through 2020, first 2 weeks, 32 games, just like this year. Last season, there had been a combined, in 32 games, one illegal man downfield penalty in all of the NFL. Through 2 weeks in 2021, 32 games, there have already been 14 illegal man downfield penalties so far. Now, you could argue, well, there's more RPO play calling now, run pass option, and it's easy to get a penalty on those because sometimes a lineman thinks it's going to be a run, it ends up being a pass, and, you know, I could see that. But it's beyond that because that's just one penalty. Let's look at the entire total number of penalties, and you may have noticed this anecdotally just watching football this year. But so far in 2021, all right, again, 32 games so far, 2 weeks worth. In the entirety of 2020, last season, there were 256 regular season games. Only twice in those 256 games was there a game with 20-plus combined penalties. Just happened two times. In 2021, already through week two, just 32 games, there have been 20 games with 20 or more combined penalties. 10 times more than the entirety of last season. 256 games. So there's flags flying right and left. Same thing, 2020. If you look at entire weeks, there was a 17-week season last year. None of those weeks, not a single one, had an entire week of 200 total penalties across the entire league. There was 198, I think, in week two last year was the highest. This year, in just 2 weeks, okay, both weeks have gone over 200 penalties total. There were 214 flags taken in week one and 221 in week two. So it's a flag bonanza. And listen, like any other thing that's a game, football's a game, has rules, okay? Those rules need to be enforced. It affects the game just as much when you don't call an obvious penalty as when you do call a penalty that wasn't a penalty. Both things are a mistake. Both things have a negative impact on the game. As a fan, and I tell you this all the time, some people it doesn't bother as much. It depends on your outlook on life, really. A lot of people are more philosophical about this stuff. Oh, well, they even out in the end. Oh, well, you know, it's the human element. Oh, well, this and that. I'm not one of those people. If there was some imaginary way to have a robot, an absolutely infallible computer or robot, actually call every penalty in every sport and there'd be no misses ever, I would fall in love with that immediately. In tennis this year, at the U.S. Open, you know, they have that now. You know how they had, and they've had this for a while, but you know how they can have a player challenge a call and they have that Hawkeye system that shows you where the ball actually landed? Someone got the bright idea that said, hey, if we have this technology, instead of just sitting here and waiting for a player to challenge, why don't we just use that for every single shot hit? And I don't know how many people have, and maybe a lot of you don't watch tennis, but in the U.S. Open this past year, they had no line judges on the court. It was all automated, the entire thing, and it was awesome. And some people, again, this depends on your outlook on life and your philosophy, because I read about this and they interviewed some people that just, you know, were fans at the event. Some people were like, no, I like it when the players had to challenge and there was strategy about when they should challenge. I don't know why you'd like that, but and some people were like, oh, I liked it even more in the 80s when John McEnroe would yell at the linesman. And that I actually did like too, so at least I understand that. But still, like, some people thought it was better to have calls be wrong. Like, they would intentionally root for calls to be wrong because they thought it was more fun that way. And I get the whole entertainment aspect of it, but I just want a straight-up game. And I hate, and it's not just games involving teams I'm rooting for, just any game I'm watching. I hate when a bad call changes the direction of the game or potentially influences the outcome of the game. I feel cheated as a viewer, especially if it's a close game late and these guys have been battling it out for 3 hours. And, you know, you see it all the time because, again, it's impossible not to have these things go wrong. It's just not possible to get everything right. But you see it all the time where these late game calls and this and that. I don't even know if it's worse than it's ever been. Some people will tell you it is, but I think maybe we just are able to, you know, really see it better now and really keep track of it better now than we ever used to. But it bothers me. So the U.S. Open this year, they actually recorded umpires yelling out like they used to, and they hooked it all up to the computer system, and a shot would be like really close to the line, and you'd hear the thing was programmed to go, out! You know, it wasn't even a person standing there, it was a recording. And they actually even recorded it a few different versions so that the really close ones, because, you know, if a ball's like 2 feet out, you just go out. But if it's right near the line, you got to sell your call, right? Just like umpires put that extra fist pump in there on the close plays at first base. So they recorded a few of them, and they actually had it play even louder when it was a really close call. This is genius stuff. I mean, I can't compliment it enough what they were able to do. And there was no arguing. Like, the players, a couple times a player was really convinced, like, something was wrong, like, in or out, and they'd look up to go challenge. They'd be like, wait a minute, the computer already checked this for me, and it must be right. And it was. Like, it knows. So you can't do that in every sport, obviously. That tennis has got, you know, black and white calls that are physical things, in or out, you know, on the line, off the line. You can't do that with other sports. But if there was an imaginary way to do it, I would. But since there's not, okay, and here's where I'm going with all this. Since there's not, I would always, always, always prefer to see them err on the side of fewer flags, not more flags. Even though both are wrong. I mean, obviously you want everything called straight up as perfectly as possible. So I'm not saying let the bad things go. But if you're going to err on one side or the other, all these flags, stoppages in the game, more face time for the refs, and just in general, devaluing the action you're seeing or not counting things that happen. I mean, and this goes back to the college game on Saturday, Florida-Alabama. And admittedly, I'm a Florida fan. So on this one, I am biased. But you can't make a third down stop anymore. They were like, every time there was a third down stop, pass interference, pass interference, pass interference. And these are weak calls. You know, a couple of them were legit, a couple of them. But man, every time in any game now, pro or college, and whether it's one of my teams or not, that there's a big third down stop, I always stop and wait like an extra 5 seconds because inevitably that pass interference flag is coming in. Like that happens a lot more than it used to, it feels like. And I don't have the overall numbers to back that specific claim up, but the overall numbers from this year as far as flags, we do have them, and they are indisputable. And there's been more flags, I mean, in a dramatic fashion in just 2 weeks than we saw all of last year. So we'll see if that trend keeps going or not. I hope it does not. Either way, I don't think through 2 weeks you can argue with the entertainment value of the NFL, especially the way the primetime games have fallen. All the primetime games, I mean, Monday night against the Packers-Lions ended up not being that great, which you could have predicted, although it was close for a while. But overall, like, the Thursday night game to start the year with the Bucs was good. Sunday night football was good. Then you had Monday night Ravens-Chiefs. Then Thursday night was good again, or at least a close game with the Giants-Redskins. I mean, the primetime games have all been good. Viewership numbers are through the roof. Football is humming like it always does, and I'm so glad it is this time of year. So as we enter week three, you know, here's what I'm looking at for this Bucs-Rams game. Mainly what I'm happy about, it seems like the Bucs are finally moving away from these really inefficient first down runs and their insistence that we have to run the ball on first down just to say that we did. They've been doing a lot less of that lately, so against this team like the Rams, where points are going to, you know, be something you need a lot of, it's not a bad idea to keep that whole thing going. And with Brady getting rid of the ball as quickly as he does, I'm not going to say Aaron Donald's going to be neutralized. I would never say that. But I think between our offensive line play and Brady's ability to get the ball out quick, they can keep that at bay. Jalen Ramsey's going to be a tough assignment. You know, he'll be out there. Cooper Kupp, when the Rams have the ball, has been a huge thorn in the Bucs' side, put up some big numbers in the past. You know, wouldn't be surprised to see him have a big day. And, you know, may end up being a track meet like we think. A lot of times you think these things are going to go a certain way, though, and they don't go the way you think. Either way, it should be a lot of fun, and we will all be tuned in on Sunday afternoon at 4:25. Again, on Fox, Bucs-Rams only game in Week 3 with two 2-0 teams facing off against one another, and one of them will be 3-0 by the end of it, barring a tie, of course. So email me if you want to. Love hearing from you guys. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. BobbyGameDay @Yahoo.com on Twitter. Same thing, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. I want to thank the Joes, like I always do, for giving me the chance to be on here. JoeBucksFan.com, best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, TV, internet, or radio. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great weekend. You know it's here when you hear that music. That's why I play it. And let's get ready for Sunday afternoon. Get everything out of the way. Before that, Saturday should be a great day of college football. Go to a local high school game if you have a chance on Friday. And take care of yourselves. Be safe. Have fun. I'll be back next week. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.